And we're back. Welcome to Wildlife Cake and Cocktails. I'm your host, Yanni Torcola. We're here at Caboolture Region Environmental Education Center. That's Creek, ending with a C. We're talking frog ID with Dr. Jody Rowley, frog biologist, curator of amphibian and reptile conservation biology at the Australian Museum. She got a Bachelor of Science in Biology with first class honors from the University of New South Wales in 2002, moving on to do her PhD at James Cook Uni in 2007, studying interspecific variation in frog declines due to chytrid fungus. Using an integrative approach of ecological, behavioral, bioacoustic, molecular, and morphological data, Jody's work explores amphibian biodiversity, ecology, conservation, and often with a focus on that interspecific behavioral variation differences in relation to extinction risks. She also takes frequent expeditions in search of amphibians in often remote areas such as the forested mountains of Southeast Asia. And she's currently involved in the massive collaborative effort known as Frog ID, the brand new smartphone app for recording and identifying frog calls around Australia. You can check out the awesome, totally free app at frogid.net.au and get involved in this groundbreaking nationwide citizen science and frog conservation initiative. Ha! Jody, thanks so much for letting us tag along. I understand it's been a busy week here for Frog ID launch in Queensland.
It has. Luckily, there's been a little bit of rain though, so I think I timed it perfectly. Because I've been praying for some rain so I can see some local frogs.
And a little bit of a temperature drop as well. It's been like massively hot and dry, and now we've got a bit of a cool change, some excellent conditions. So hopefully we're in for a good night.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. I mean, that's one of the problems with frogs is that they can be so hard to survey. And that's one of the great things about Frog ID, in that you'll be able to get the records of frogs from across Australia without having to sort of go out at whatever time. You know, if I come here and it's not wet, then I'm relying on everyone else out here when it is wet.
Go to the desert and dig things up out of the sand and all that kind of
stuff. Yeah, definitely.
Excellent. Now, I guess what we got you here, is there any particular frogs that you're interested in finding while we're here on the southeast Queensland area, or?
I wouldn't mind a brood frog or two. Sidophany raveni. I don't know if it's exactly around here, but the general area, yeah, I mean, I've never seen that
one. Tiny little things, aren't they?
Tiny little things that sort of go from the leaf litter, but they're quite beautiful frogs.
So fairly similar to some of the little toadlets and gungans we've heard on some of our other frogging shows with.
A little bit prettier and when you turn them upside down. That we'll be doing that because we're just after their calls.
Of course.
But they've got beautiful sort of, warning colours in their belly. It's usually sort of a marbled, a black and a white. And so that's one of the cool things. I've done a bit of research on those guys and their bellies are always delightful.
Very cool. So look, we've got some great conditions. Hopefully we're going to find some cool stuff while we're out there. Now, what got you interested in frogs specifically? Is it something that you were interested in as a kid that sparked your career as a biologist, or something that you came to later?
Something that I came to later, unfortunately. I grew up in the city and I never really, in Sydney, my parents lived right in inner city. I never really knew about frogs. So it wasn't until I actually sort of fortuitously decided I liked biology that I would do environmental science at the University of New South Wales. We started doing field trips, going out at night. I discovered frogs. I saw these beautiful creatures in the forest with their eyeballs and toe pads, and I just kind of fell in love with them. So that was about age 18. I wish I'd had Frog ID back then and then got into frogs much earlier, but I didn't. I didn't even know frogs were really a thing.
Right.
And so then it was sort of falling in love with them at the same time as realizing how much trouble frogs were in.
Yeah,
so I just kind of decided, right, that's it. That's what I'm going to do. I'm trying to dedicate my life and my research to trying to make sure we don't lose any more frogs and do what I can for frog conservation.
Wonderful. And since finding those first frogs around Sydney, obviously, you take some pretty amazing trips to Southeast Asia, particularly the sort of Vietnam area lately. What's the draw card with Vietnam? I'm guessing a lot of unexplored frog diversity and hard to reach unsurveyed locations?
Yeah, that's it. So while I was finishing up my PhD up at James Cook University in Townsville, sort of around that time, there was a global amphibian assessment, which was the first time we'd sort of looked at frogs across the world, sort of tried to get a global snapshot of how they were doing. And that's the first time we really realised how much trouble frogs were in. And one of the sort of results coming out of that was that Southeast Asia was a bit of a black hole in terms of our knowledge.
Right.
So there was some huge threats, relative deforestation rate in the world, but we just had really no idea what was going on, how many species there were, how they were doing. And so that was sort of when I decided, right, I'm going to go over there and I'm going to help understand Southeast Asian frogs. So for about the last decade, I've been working particularly in Vietnam. So I moved over to Cambodia, working in Vietnam. Vietnam doing expeditions with some amazing local colleagues and students and trying to document the frog fauna. And they also have salamanders, so that's pretty cool too. And Cecilians, so they've got all of the amphibians.
Wow,
and
awesome.
Yeah, so it's really cool. And do capacity building. So and now I've sort of, I guess, in many ways put myself out of a job because there's so many awesome young Vietnamese, Cambodian, and, you know, the whole region is just full of fantastic biologists from the work of, you know, myself just a little bit, but a lot of my colleagues. So now I'm sort of moving a little bit back to Australia because there's still a lot of work to be done here.
Yeah, right. Well, look, as we spoke about, you know, frogs are in decline here in Australia and globally as well. I mean, even as of 2010, there was the Hayes et al. Paper showing that about 70% of global amphibian species are in decline, and there's insufficient data on a 22% more. So now, according to them, there was no real single cause that could be typically pinned down. Rather, it's an interaction of factors, for example, invasive species, overexploitation, habitat loss modification, global changes, diseases. Is there, we spoke about chytrid fungus on several of our other shows. Is there a lot of losses in areas without chytrid, or does it seem to be one of the major drivers of some of these declines?
It's thought to be, and it's very hard, as you said, to sort of pin down a single cause, and it is probably a multitude of causes all acting together.
Yeah, right, stacking on each other.
Yeah, you know, the immune system of the frogs going down, therefore the amphibian chytrid fungus has more of an impact, that kind of thing.
Sure.
But we do think that most of the sort of severe declines and extinctions that occurred in Australia are at least something to do with the amphibian chytrid fungus, unfortunately.
Well, look, one of the cool things that we also noticed as well, especially with our friend Scott Iper, who's here with us joining on the show, on our herping show down to Mount Tambourine, we were looking at Litoria pearsoniana, which has recently been delisted, as I understand. So, you know, I guess there's a broad range of variables in their responses. And I guess that's why you're looking at these interspecific differences and how that relates to chytrid and other extinction risk factors. Is there risky behaviours for frogs per se?
Yeah, so we noticed quite early on when frogs started declining from the amphibian chytrid fungus that it tended to be the sort of higher elevation sites, it tended to be the stream breeding frogs or the species that spend a lot of time in the water, and that makes sense because fungus is like sort of typically, you know, I spend a lot of time in the rainforest and I grow fungus on my skin sometimes, so I know it is the sort of constantly damp, constantly cool kind
of conditions.
Exactly, yeah, so right. That was, my PhD was...
trying not to foster them too much.
Was stalking frogs and trying to figure out like how you can have these frog species that breed and live in kind of essentially the same sort of habitat,
right.
How they were using the environment and how that might likely affect whether or not they decline from the amphibian chytrid fungus or not. And not surprisingly, I suppose it did turn out that the frogs that spend most of the time in the day where it was potentially hot and dry if they were out, they were in the stream, they were under the boulders, and they were also constantly in touch with each other, literally.
Right.
So passing infection from one frog to the other, presumably, whereas the frogs that went either 20 metres up into the canopy and basked on the leaves up there, nice and hot and dry, or the frogs that would sit on rocks or make expeditions into sort of open paddocks would be less likely to decline from the disease.
Right. That's fascinating. Well, look, and I suppose that's, you know, with all these declines still happening, I understand, particularly... here in Australia, there's we've got over 50 species of frogs in the Australian subtropics, and 23 of them, as I understand, are of conservation concern. So, look, I guess frog populations are pretty hard to monitor, but that's where Frog ID and citizen science kind of comes in. Survey work is costly. It takes a lot of field time and a lot of effort and a lot of equipment. So, therefore, Frog ID, pretty much, I guess it's here to take some of that burden off conservation scientists. And can you tell us a little bit about how the project got started anyway?
So it's come out of, like you said, that a lot of frogs are data deficient, that we don't know enough information about them, and that there are not enough frog biologists to survey all of the frogs in Australia on a regular basis. So what this is it's a call for people across Australia, citizen scientists, whatever you want to call them, to get out there and collect the data that we need to try and prioritise conservation efforts, figure out how many species even of frog in Australia, how they're doing, what we need to save. There's very limited money in conservation, so we need to make sure that we allocate it to the species and the places that need it the most. But in order to make those sort of decisions, we need to know what we have, where it is, and how it's doing. So this is kind of that. It's a plea, please help us understand Australia's frogs, help us put them on the map, make sure that they're taken into consideration in any kind of land use management, anything like that. And we've had an absolutely fantastic response in the time since November the 10th it was launched.
So so it was only a couple of months, November 2017, it's February 2018 now, so it's only been a few months since it was launched, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, less than 3 months, so
and,
it's pretty
the
insane.
And the rollout's going well. How many calls are you guys getting coming in?
Well, so far we've had about 13,000 submissions from across Australia. It's always one of those funny things. You launch something and you're like, how is this going to get taken up? I don't know. And then at the beginning, we just, oh my gosh, it's just, you could see from the back end of the website, you could just see bloop, 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 like just things flooding in from across Australia, which is amazing. And it's so exciting. You know, you get a snapshot of, I'll be commuting on the bus sometimes listening to frog calls and identifying them. And, I'll just be hearing the beautiful sounds of the country and swamps and streams across Australia instead of being in, the hideous gridlock traffic that I'm in. You also get to hear the people sometimes, the little kids that are, look, Dad, I can see this frog. And it's awesome to hear people getting engaged and getting out there. Yeah. Some of the feedback we've had, honestly, the data is amazing and it's blown my mind and it's going to really help, frog conservation in Australia, but also just the people out there and the feedback, saying, I never noticed frogs before and now it's all I hear and see. People that have recorded frogs almost every single night since launch, it's absolutely fantastic. And so now it is about getting the word out. It's making sure that people have the app on their phone and whenever they hear the frog that they just, stick it out the window of the car even and record 20 seconds or record it when it, the green tree frogs calling on their drain pipe. All this information will help us build a picture of frogs and how they're doing across Australia.
That's awesome. It's great to hear that people are getting so excited and amped about this. And look, I guess speaking of data and getting amped about this, we should probably get out there into the field nice and quick. Guys, just so you know where we are, bear with me. So we are at the Caboolture Region Environmental Centre. That's 18 hectares of reserve next to Burpengary Creek, 40 kilometres north of Brisbane. There's various natural and man-made ecosystems from open remnant grasslands, acacia woodlands, creeks, wetlands, endangered lowland riparian rainforests, a macadamia plantation, and some picnicking areas and stuff like that as well. The walking trails along the creek and through the reserve, some of them are up to 1.5 kilometres long, and they the area also has, through Creek, Friends of Creek, regular guided walks, educational programs, and a native plant nursery. You can check them out on Facebook at Friends of Creek, that's C-R-E-E-C, the Friends of Creek Association. You can also see all the details there on the Moreton Bay Regional Council. A huge variety of fauna have been found in the area as well. Koalas, gliders, powerful owls, frogmouths, snakes, and 30 plus frog species in the area, including greater barred frogs, a diversity of tree frogs, marsh frogs, toadlets, and the little copperbacks, and the other little pseudophrynae and gungans and all that other kind of stuff. So I guess we better get out there in the field. Jody, we'll talk to you some more once we're walking around looking for frogs.
Looking forward to it.
Awesome. Cheers. Cheers, guys. We'll talk soon. Bye. And we're out in the field looking for frogs with Jody Rowley from Frog ID and everybody at the Caboolture Region Environmental Education Centre. Let's see what we can find. Everybody's heading ahead of us a little bit already, so we'll turn the recorders back on once we find something. Cheers.
Yeah, that's an eastern sedge frog, or eastern dwarf sedge frog. Common names are tricky for me because I just learnt the Latin names and so I sort of have to, and I'm trying to use the ones we use in the app to be consistent, so I have to think sometimes. So you don't have to, once you record it, you don't have to put the habitat at all if you don't feel like it, because we'll probably be able to see from GPS, where you are, but I'd sort of put kind of rural. See, it's sometimes really hard, what is a small pond and what is not, what a big pond, and then it will give you the options. So there's 27% potential matches of frogs here. It's much more diverse than Sydney. And so I scroll down until, if you want, you can listen to all the different frogs, like, no, it's not that one. It's not this one. No. Although that is an awesome call.
It is.
Oh, I love the red-eyed tree frogs. And they've got the territorial bit at the end. It's like a soft little purr. It sounds like the least aggressive part of their call, but it's actually the territorial bit. So I'm just going to play this through because it's great.
Yeah.
So that's the angry getaway males bit. But it is this frog that we hear. Let me play it. Why is it not playing? So that's that, and he's probably hearing this and getting a bit excited. He ramped up with that. So I've ticked it's that one. Next, so I can now add notes if I want. So usually I'm just writing notes to my friends who I know or my colleagues that will be identifying them. Like for instance, when we got a flat the other day in the field, I walked away and recorded some frogs and I was like, the noise in the background is Tim jacking up the car because I was recording frogs. But other people writing some things like it's calling in my drain pipe or something like that, you know, there's also other frogs around but they weren't calling. One thing that's pretty cool, some people are getting really into it from the science perspective and also bringing thermometers with them and recording the air temperature, which is quite useful if you're going to be analysing the call for a scientific paper. And photos are great. So we sort of made it purposely not like a really obvious kind of take a photo, we want a photo, because that often encourages people to grab the frog. And so for a lot of the other citizen science things that are around photos of frogs, I've been asked to identify frogs that, you know, of endangered species in people's bathrooms being held and stuff. I'm like, oh, put it back. But photos are fantastic. So if you can just snap with your phone a photo of the frog that you're actually recording, that can sometimes be really useful, like I said. So help us get an idea of how the calls and the patterns and the colours of the frogs changes over Australia. And then you just press submit. Oh, I need to log in first. So you need to log in. It doesn't matter if you don't have reception where you are, it will when you get into reception or when you enter Wi-Fi, everything will upload. One thing that it's not so obvious right now, and hopefully in the next update it will be, it's not super obvious when it hasn't been submitted. So if you record frogs, I encourage you to go back into your Wi-Fi or into reception and just open up your profile page, and then hopefully everything should sync then, because we've had a few instances of people thinking that their calls have been submitted, and because it shows up as sort of submitted, which it shouldn't, and so they don't come through. So make sure you sort of get in reception and open it up again, that you don't just sort of wait around. But here we've got 4G, so that's pretty good, and that's pretty much all you need to do. So it removes, I mean, as a scientist with scientific licenses from national parks and things to do work, one of the requirements of our scientific licenses is that we note down all the animals and wildlife that we see and we give to them. And honestly, those spreadsheets and things can take days to do. So this kind of takes all the bother out of it, because the GPS coordinates, the time, everything is just kind of automatically done. And you don't even have to identify the frogs if you don't want to. It does help if you guess the frogs. It often helps. And I know there's some people that know the frogs, and it just makes us job. We do listen to the frog call still. We don't just automatically trust. But it's great because you're like, oh, I trust you. You know, some people are writing notes. Oh, there's three tusked frogs and two striped marsh frogs calling and all that kind of stuff's cool. But yeah, it is pretty easy. And then you can go online and as well as you can play all your calls from here, but you can go online and also see everything in one place as well.
So I could record that on a tablet?
If your tablet has a SIM card in,
yes,
that will know where you are. So that's the main thing.
Probably
so
not.
Yeah. so where it's not optimized for an iPad at the moment, because a lot of iPads don't have it. We're hoping the next versions will be optimized, because at the moment it's kind of cutting things off on iPads. But you need the phone or the tablet or whatever to know your GPS location. So phones don't need reception to do that. They can do that in the middle of nowhere. I've been down gorges. So yes, that's the...
I'll have to get one.
You might have to. So yeah, sometimes... And we've got a few people that are like, oh, I don't have a good enough phone. I'm like, oh, might be time to upgrade. And that, yeah, I mean, that's sort of a weird reason too. I mean, even my boyfriend doesn't have a phone that's good. He's got like a really ancient phone, my sort of cast-off phones that won't. But we wanted to also put a lot of information in it, which is really hard. So we wanted the calls. We wanted the photos, and so we wanted to make sure that it was sort of everything. And you can have it so that you just, every time you want to look at it, it'll sort of download just what you want to look at. But I do encourage everyone to download it all on their phone, so that when you're in the middle of nowhere, you can still see the pictures and hear the calls and things like that.
So for any technologically stubborn people listening, you do, like, this is a good reason to get a new phone so you can ID frogs. Well, any excuse will do, but yeah, upgrade.
It's not about upgrading. There's a couple of apps that I would like, but I don't know what sort of phone to buy.
Oh, right.
How good it needs to be in the first place, because I know nothing about them.
Mm.
Oh, and then there'll be another upgrade coming out soon as well.
Well, the things are like little tweaks at this point in time, so we're just looking to improve it. So if you have any feedback as well, we're really keen to get it, because I think most people are so nice that they're not telling us if, you know, we want to know, for example, if you find a frog in a pond and we only got it listed as in streams, we'll change the app, we'll fix it. So every sort of suggestion really helps us. And that's a really cool thing. We've had some frog biologists get in touch with us and say, hey, I think the main threat to this frog is this. Can you change that in there? And done, you know, we can just do it automatically. So yeah, all feedback is gratefully appreciated.
All right, so we're on the trail just behind Dr. Jody Rialli. I've got my my lovely frog themed passion fruit spawn frog cupcake. And I got a little bit of coffee and some tea here. We're also joined by our good buddy Scott Iper here. How you doing, Scott?
I'm good, mate. How are you going?
Fantastic, mate. Looking forward to finding some frogs if we have some luck. What do you reckon?
Mate, I've got all the camera gear here. It's a bit early at the moment. We'll see how we go, but you know, you never know. You might see something new. There's a few phallax calling I can hear now.
So. Littoria phallax, the little sedge frogs, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's phallax, but I reckon we'll get a few interesting things, but hopefully we'll wait till it's dark, but especially if it's dry as well. I mean, it'd be great if it was bloody raining like it was yesterday too.
Yeah, so. It always seems to clear up the day that we go out looking for frogs, doesn't it?
Well, that's why we've got the head torches, so we can do some eye shining, so we'll see how we go.
Yeah, right. No worries. Oh, I think we can hear some stuff. Let's rock up quietly, and we'll see what's happening up ahead.
Is that a cricket? They're all cricket, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, during the day, you'd be pushed to get a frog calling and anything, but serious water, unless it had just been pouring with rain, then you'd probably get them calling in here. This looks like a good place for some frogs.
So this afternoon daytime frog sounds is a good thing to kind of anti-train yourself to know what to not listen to.
To learn your crickets.
Yes, to learn your crickets, which is very, very important, as I understand.
Yeah, so and there are frogs, and we've heard a few that call during the day, but most frogs won't really get going anyway until sunset, and usually the best time to look for frogs is the first few hours after dark.
Right.
Because then it starts to cool down as well, and then the frogs aren't the biggest fan of that, most frogs anyway.
Well, being ectotherms as well.
Mm-hmm. So there are some frogs that call in winter and will be calling away in 1 or 2 degrees, but a lot of them will not do anything like that, yeah.
There's a phallax calling now, off to the left.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there we go, we're coming up to the pond.
There's a few phallax calling.
Yeah, a bit of a chorus.
Do you find frogs very often during the day?
You'll see them sitting out sometimes on the reeds and some of those frogs, but I generally, we go out at night.
Yeah.
It's a nighttime job.
Yeah.
All right, lovely little sedgy, pondy creek thing that we're approaching to. And that does sound like those lovely Littoria phallax that we're approaching. Let's get in there and have a look.
It's not livestock. You getting a whiff of that?
I'm sorry.
What are we looking at, Yanni?
Well, we're looking at some nice tall sedge grass, but the sun's still up, so I think in the next few minutes, as things kind of get a little bit darker, we might have a bit more luck with some frog calls. But it's a lovely, lovely creek line right here. I understand this is Burpengary Creek. Some lovely sedges and rushes and some beautiful acacias and wattles lining it on the side. So hopefully we'll have a bit of luck. We'll see how we go. Jody, I guess for everybody listening at home who wants to go out frogging, aside from, you know, obviously you got to go out at the right time, right place, ideally, so a little bit after dark, after some rain. Do you have any other frogging tips for our listeners at home?
Be safe is the most important thing.
Yeah, I've got my first aid kit in the backpack right
keep
now.
Keep an eye on where you're walking, you don't drop into the water. I've been listening to a lot of calls from the Northern Territory, and if you're in places where there are saltwater crocs, it makes frogging a little difficult as well. So that's, I mean, certainly don't go crouching by the edge of waterways in the Northern Territory or seriously North Queensland.
Yeah.
Certainly
That'd be a bad way to end a frogging trip.
It would be a terrible recording to receive on Frog ID.
Little, like of the herpetofaunas.
Be safe for you, be safe for the frogs.
It's like some baby cane toads popping around. Oh, really? On the ground. Yeah.
Generally don't touch the frog, don't trample on the habitat.
Yeah.
And sort of just, I guess, be careful about going from one place to the other. So on the Frog ID website, we've got information on making sure that you don't track disease from one pond into another. So if you are sort of getting your feet wet going to one habitat, make sure that you then just disinfect your boots in between sites.
Yeah, simple little bleach wash, basically.
Bleach or actually toilet duck is pretty good.
Really?
It's got benzalkonium chloride in it, okay. Which has been shown to nuke the disease. So we usually carry, bottles of bleach or some of the disinfected like toilet duck, and make sure that you sort of scrub the mud and stuff off your boots.
Particularly if you are entering one water body and going to another one.
If you're just going to your backyard pond or just to one place, then it's not such a big deal. But we just have to make sure that we're not, in our attempts to conserve frogs and help their conservation, that we're not adding to the threats is a big one as well.
Of course. Now, we're out here at nighttime using torches and headlamps. Do you do a lot of eye shining for frogs when you're looking for them, or do you more just kind of comb an area and see what you can find?
If I'm looking to record frog calls, I try not to eye shine them because they will probably be very alerted to my presence and wary.
Yeah, and probably stop calling quite as much.
But if I'm looking to identify the frog visually, if I'm doing a frog survey, if we're spending a lot of time on the northern tablelands of New South Wales looking for a little frog, the peppered tree frog, we want to know all the frogs, who they are, sitting along the rocks and along the banks, so we definitely use eye shine. And so frog eye shine is sort of, if you wear the torch on your head, then it shines the eyes of creatures big and small back at you at night. So we'll see, dingoes or unfortunately feral cats and things, their eyeballs are like laser beams looking at you. Frog eye shine is sort of a bit of a dull pinkish red. And unlike mammals, frogs don't turn their head to look at you because they don't really care about you. unlike a mammal that might watch you. Right. So they just happen to be facing your way. So you sort of walk along the stream looking for frog eyeballs, but also just the general shape of a frog. When the frogs are calling, then that makes things a lot easier because you can sort of just follow the sound, like the female would follow the sound.
Yeah, you just tone in right into it. I mean, I guess that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, they're advertising their presence, which is fantastic because they want the girls to come to them, but they also might get me coming to them, which they probably, that's not exactly what they're after.
Wrong girl.
Definitely wrong girl. and they might also get predators coming to them, so things like bats that will sort of be attracted to their call that they make, and actually even parasites. So mosquitoes and flies that suck frog blood will come to the calls of the frogs. So they attract the things that they want, which is the female frogs of their own species, but also probably a bunch of things they don't really want.
So, I mean, aside from the energetic burden of calling and using that buccal cavity to produce those, sometimes really high-frequency sounds or, different frequencies of sounds, they're advertising their presence to predators, parasites, and anything else that might also want to do them harm, correct?
Yep, definitely. So it's a risky business for a male frog, but I guess the reward is worth it if they get the girl.
Hey, it's always risky business. It's always risky business. All right, I guess we'll turn on the recorders if we find anything down along the creek line in a little bit.
Fingers crossed, it's getting a little darker.
Woohoo! All right, guys, we'll talk to you soon. Cheers. All right, we're back out on the track, folks. We've made it back to the creek center, and a few families have headed off home, but there's a few keen herpers, Dr. Jody Rowley, Scott Iper, and a couple of WCC personnel still going out for another little walk. Looks like they're chasing a big old cane toad around now. So look, at least there is some fauna coming out, and we're going to be finding some wildlife. But hopefully now that it's a little bit darker, we'll maybe find a few amphibians. But I guess we'll let you know. Let's follow these guys on, and we'll switch the recorder back on once we find something. Cheers, guys.
Okay, Jody, so what's been the best call that you've had so far received out of the 13,000 odd calls that you guys have got?
It's a really hard question. I like a lot of them for different reasons. So there's the 11 species that we've got calling at once, and it sounds like a dance party when you start getting the sort of like the bonk, 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 rant, rant, rant. Yeah, it's just fantastic. So I love that. The call recordings we've got from around Uluru has just been amazing as well. The frogs sound crazy, but also just getting records of frogs, you know, where you could spend a year surveying for them, and if it wasn't, you know, if you weren't there at the right time, you would never get them. And then there's some really curious calls that require more investigation, and they've been from places like Arnhem Land and along the Top End, where we're not 100% sure that it is that frog. In some cases we've sort of said to them, look, you know, can you try and get another recording and, you know, see what's going on here? And they're the kind of things we're hoping that we might then, you know, do a little bit of an expedition together with the person who submitted the call and see what they got, because it could be exciting. But in all honesty, we've been so consumed with listening to frog calls and just sort of validating frog calls at the moment that we're still not at the stage where we're really looking, you know, in detail. And there's a lot still that we haven't validated because we're sort of trying to analyse them and figure it out. And so it is all incredibly exciting.
Man, there must be a big backlog of, data there. I mean, like, how many people do you have kind of sorting through it all? Do you have a lot of hands to get through that massive amount of data coming in?
There's about 6 or 7 people that are validating calls at the moment. Wow. And
so
primarily,
like 2,000 each.
Yeah, you know? primarily validating calls. And then we also send a lot of them to a network of frog experts around Australia. So there's my office has literally turned into a call centre, pun intended, where we are listening with headphones on a lot of the day. And then we also send them around to each other. We get each other to check them. We send them to experts around Australia. You know, if there's a crazy call from Western Australia, I'll send it to my colleagues in Western Australia and get their opinion on it. So it is a massive team effort.
So like any good collaborative science effort, there's collaboration upon collaboration upon collaboration. And hopefully that way you get nice verification of what you're finding, right?
Yeah, definitely. And then the next stage will be having the public help us out with that. So not only getting people to record the frogs, but getting them to help us, particularly with the things like the green tree frogs and the crickets. That would be nice to make sure I don't have to listen to crickets anymore. So get people involved. And it's addictive. You know, I'll sit down to listen to some frog calls and I'll have to pry myself away, because every call recording is another opportunity to hear something amazing, to hear a frog that, you know, hasn't been recorded in that part of the world before. It's so fun.
And look, I guess every time you're going to be getting some unique data, because I mean, these are pretty much every time it's a new observation.
Yeah, it is. So it's absolutely fantastic. No two calls are the same, you know, no two recordings are the same. Every little bit of data that we get, every call recording is going to help us figure out what's going on, potentially make new discoveries, and at least make sure that frogs get taken into account in decision making, land use and management.
Very cool, very cool. All right, guys, we're pulling up to the car park once again. We'll wrap up in a minute. Cheers, guys. All right, guys, we're back here at the Caboolture Region Environmental Education Centre after our second, a little bit later frog walk. And Scott, not much out there tonight.
Lots of toads, mate. A few phalax. Not really much of a surprise considering how degraded the habitat is, though.
Conditions obviously weren't perfect, Jody. We'd like a bit more rain.
Yeah, definitely. It's been dry here for a while. It rained a little bit yesterday. It was probably a little bit more froggy last night, and that's, I know, to me, highlights. I mean, we got a couple of core recordings. We got some cane toads calling. We got some eastern dwarf sedge frogs calling. But some of the other frogs that we know are likely to be around here, they were not out and calling, and we didn't see them either. So it really needs people. You know, frog ID is fantastic because it just will be the people that are here when they're calling, recording the frogs. So yeah. I can plan all the trips I want. We can come out here now. And frogs are just tough like that. They're really hard to study. So we only got a couple of frogs here.
But look, as you mentioned, those cane toad calls are pretty important. You said that you've got a lot of calls coming in, but not a lot of the cane toads, which are, you know, I guess people don't want to record something that's quite so a little bit boring. They're everywhere and they're an invasive species. They're not super interesting. But for you guys in the business of conservation, recording calls of cane toads and where they're moving and where they're reproducing is actually quite important.
Yeah, definitely. So Frog ID is recording calls, which are giving us information when we get calls about the breeding habitat. So this gives us information about the breeding habitat and time of the toads, the places they like to breed, the other species that are around them. And certainly, I mean, here the records, like, we know that cane toads are here, but it is interesting to maybe know how, you know, how many are calling in one pond when they're breeding. But what we want to know as well is, you know, how far they're spreading across Australia. So they're moving, they're a moving front, and sometimes they're getting picked up and transported further. And so it will help us be able to detect the population of toads, see how they're moving, and also monitor the impacts that it's having on other frogs calling and things like that as well.
Right, so people who are at that invasion front, whether it's up north and out west or down south, and how far south are cane toads now? They made it to Victoria, I'm pretty sure, haven't they?
Coffs Harbour-ish is sort of about the normal stopping point, but there's a few smaller localised populations as you go further south as well.
Yeah, certainly around Central Coast, we've heard them calling as well, of New South Wales. So, and you know, they get picked up in, you know, plants and moved down, and so there's, you know, probably going to be a random cane toad calling, but we definitely need to try and detect those. And you know, we were wandering around before and talking about other potential invasive species as well. So the black-spined toad, which is from Southeast Asia, and it's a frog that I'm quite familiar with from working over there, gets accidentally introduced into Australia a fair bit on mining equipment and all sorts of things. So Frog ID could be another sort of way that we might be able to detect some of these invasive species that are coming in and make sure that we don't get another version of the cane toad.
Yeah, wow, fascinating.
Also too, you've got invasive species in it that are in Australia as well that have been moved as well. So things like Lotoria phalax has got established populations in Melbourne now. So being able to use Frog ID to map the distribution expansion within Victoria is another opportunity there as well.
Yeah,
right. Well, for example, there was the Obendorf paper in 2005 that showed due to the banana industry, there's about 50,000 frogs per annum transported out of Cairns. So, and that's just one example. So obviously these things, and, you know, with movement of these animals, again, we might be moving chytrid fungus around as well. So, all right, very interesting stuff, guys. We better wrap it up here. Jody, thank you so much for letting us join. This has been an amazing night. The talk was fantastic. I guess you got some more talks coming up. You're heading up to the Museum of Tropical Queensland on the 5th of Feb, so tomorrow.
Yeah, bright and early, bright and early for a couple of talks.
Yeah, wonderful. And do you have much more going on after that, or are you getting a bit of a break from all the Frog ID promo after this?
I'll get a little break and then heading up to the Northern Territory, back to Darwin, to do some programming at the Museum and Art Gallery of the Northern Territory, which was, we're partnering up with museums around Australia.
Of course.
And then in May, I'll be heading to Perth to do a moaning frog survey with the Western Australian Museum. So if you have not heard the call of a moaning frog, you should definitely listen to it on Frog ID.
Yeah, wow. Okay, so look, some fantastic frogging trips coming up for you guys to join there at home. I seriously do recommend everybody check these out online. Go to frogid.net.au or check it out at australianmuseum.net.au/frogidproject or look up Frog ID on Facebook, on Twitter. Are you guys on Instagram as well?
Yeah, we do actually. Yeah, we have an Instagram account.
Yeah, wonderful. Awesome. And just before we head out, guys, RepX Brisbane Reptile Expo, 25th of March at the Royal International Convention Centre, Brisbane Showgrounds, coming up. Lizards, snakes, crocodiles, turtles, birds of prey, even some cool bugs. Check it all out at repx.com.au. Scott Iper, Jody Rowley, and our intrepid producer, Mr. Christian Summers. Thank you so much, guys. It's been an awesome night, and I hope we can do it again soon.
Bye-bye.
Cheers, guys. We'll talk soon, we're out.